Welcome back to We Do the Heavy Lifting. I'm your host, Dr. Jenna Yentis, and today we do fatigue. So a lot of us think of fatigue as just being tired, maybe just not feeling well, but is that all there is to it? And to answer those questions today, we have our guest, Dr. Steve Riegman. Very excited to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so you're currently an associate professor at Texas A&M University in kinesiology and sport management. You direct a laboratory that looks at both cognition, nutritional factors, and fatigue. And you're soon to be a director of a tactical human performance lab as well. So Huffines is growing, and Dr. Riegman's going to be joining our team officially. And so, but we're really here to talk about fatigue today. Okay. So, like I mentioned, a lot of people just think of fatigue as being tired. Is that really all there is to it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And what I would say is that when we started on this project a few years ago, the question of what is fatigue was like the biggest question. Mm-hmm. And I think what is really important to appreciate is that fatigue is contextual. And what I mean by that is you have to define it specifically in what you're doing. And for our work, we're thinking of stronger, longer-term fatigue. Mm-hmm. And I want to distinguish that first from chronic fatigue syndrome. We are not studying that. That's like months, life, years of time. Okay. And we're talking about long-term, many hours of fatigue. Because you could define fatigue as running as fast as you can, and that could last for 10 seconds, and then you're fatigued.
Okay.
So it's really important to define what you're looking at for fatigue.
Okay, so if I was, you know, just a person out in the world and I wanted to look it up in scientific literature, you're telling me that there could be a lot of different definitions to fatigue.
Yeah, and that's what we have to deal with. And when we're doing the studies, when we're analyzing data and such, we have to do it very specific to what we're looking at in regards to fatigue.
Okay, so continuing on that train of thought, it has a lot of different definitions, but then you could also be physically fatigued or you could be mentally fatigued. Does that all, like, how do you kind of know if you're reaching that point of fatigue, or how do you know if it's one or the other? Is there a way for the average person to sort of tell?
That's another good question, and I think that's what we're trying to disentangle.
Okay.
And if we want to get into the study, that one of the things mm-hmm. that we're looking at is for unique signatures of each type of fatigue.
Okay.
And there are distinguishing factors between them, and we've chosen a single gold standard for any kind of fatigue, but we're also looking at specific measures of each type of fatigue. So the question is excellent to distinguish the type of fatigue, and we're trying to get at that answer.
So why is it important for us to know the different types of fatigue?
Because then you know what to do about it, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's true.
I mean, if the indicators say your sleep is insufficient, then you know to concentrate on getting enough sleep. Athletes, for example, want to know when they're physically fatigued. So you would know, hey, you should rest a little longer or take it easier on your next workout. And so that's another one. And then mental fatigue, easy. If it's just mental, your sleep is good, your physical fatigue mm-hmm. is good, it's just your mental fatigue, you take a mental break, and there's interventions that can bring you back to a non-fatigued mental state.
So you made reference to a study that you all are doing, and that study is being funded by DARPA. So for our general audience that doesn't know what that is, it's kind of this weird version. I don't even know if they belong truly to the Department of Defense, but it's where all of the really, I don't know, crazy research that you hear of, kind of. Is that how you would define what DARPA is?
Yeah, I would say they look at things that are going to do paradigm shifts, mm-hmm. things that don't hit the market for 10 or 15 years, mm-hmm. they invented the internet in the 60s. But when did we see the internet?
Yeah, it took 30 years.
Yeah, it took a while. But they set the foundation to shift the paradigm on how we communicate and how we get information.
So really, they fund really exciting, like high-risk sort of studies. And you had mentioned that you're looking for biomarkers of those different kinds of fatigues, different type of fatigue. What do you mean by a biomarker? What does that mean?
Yeah, so a biomarker is anything produced biologically, obviously, that indicates some kind of condition.
Okay.
You can have cancer biomarkers that indicate that cancer is present, for example. And it's very useful. We look for biomarkers because we want early diagnosis, detection of a situation. And so we're looking at it for fatigue to see if we can get biomarkers that can tell an individual is hitting a limit in which things could get dangerous for them.
So wouldn't I know if I'm getting fatigued? Why would we need these biomarkers if people can just tell you if they're fatigued?
Well, DARPA, as you mentioned, is part of the Department of Defense, and their interest for soldiers is detecting fatigue in groups of people. And so that commanders, for example, if we can monitor those biomarkers, the commanders can know the status of the group they're leading, and then they can make decisions about continuing into battle or resting to make them ready for battle.
Okay, that makes sense. So if we are looking at these biomarkers of fatigue, and you had mentioned you're looking for the biomarkers of physical fatigue, mental fatigue, and then you had mentioned sleep as well. And then there's combinations of those, right? You could be mentally tired or fatigued and sleep deprived. Maybe one leads to the other. So is there a way to disentangle that? Or are you finding that there's biomarkers for those entanglements as well as them individually?
Yeah, it's a great question. And our experiment includes physical and mental at the same time. So okay. We're fatiguing them with the protocol at the same time. And then we have two other experiments where we sleep deprive them and then put them to physical fatigue. So we look at the impact of the sleep deprivation on that physical fatigue. And then we also do another sleep deprivation trial where at the end of it, we put them through a mental fatigue protocol. And so we look at those interactions. Now we're doing breath biomarkers. And so we're collecting their breath samples as they progress to fatigue. And in order doing that with all those different protocols, we get the unique features of each type of fatigue. Mm-hmm. So when we do the combination, ideally, we would have unique biomarkers of each. And then when we do the combination, both sets of biomarkers show up.
I see what you're saying. So then it would really help individuals by monitoring breath to understand what type of fatigue maybe they're displaying. Are there instances where people are displaying maybe those biomarkers, but they don't feel fatigued? Like, is my feeling of fatigue the same as my biomarkers?
Yeah, well, we collect subjective measures of fatigue. So mm-hmm. we'll look at those relationships of whether their subjective feelings of fatigue are representative of their biomarkers of fatigue and our objective measures of fatigue. And they tend to correlate strongly, but are they absolute? Mm-hmm. An example I think that is interesting, though, does subjective really matter if a pilot, for example, currently mm-hmm. the protocol for determining their fatigue status is asking the pilot, are you tired? Well, if they want to fly, they'll say, no, I'm not tired. If they don't want to fly, they'll say they're tired. It's subjective. And so if you're in charge of all those pilots, mm-hmm. you want an objective measure. So you can't rely necessarily on that subjective measure of fatigue.
That sort of makes sense. It's, like what you're saying, like if you really want to fly that day,
yeah.
even though you didn't get great sleep, You'd be like, yeah, I'm not tired.
I mean, if you're a fighter pilot, you want to fly, right?
Absolutely. Everybody wants to fly those planes, don't they?
Yeah.
It looks exciting. So individuals naturally do things to combat their fatigue, right? And I think of caffeine as a main one. Like, I don't want to list any of the brands, but we're all familiar with all of the energy drinks that are out there. You go to any gas station and there's just tons and tons of them. So is there a point in which you consume so much caffeine that it, so I guess what I'm asking is what does it take to offset the fatigue? Are there other interventions? Is that the best way, or is that not something we should be doing?
First comment on the caffeine, I think an interesting perspective that I've heard recently that I agree with is that caffeine doesn't make you not tired. It just gives you the perception that you're not tired. So your fatigue is still there. You just get this temporary illusion that you're not tired.
Okay.
Physiologically, you're still affected by the fatigue.
Okay.
And then the second part is about the breath biomarkers as far as what can be done. And I think one of the interesting things that'll come out of it is those chemicals that we're breathing off come from what's going on inside our body. And once we identify biomarkers associated with fatigue, we can trace them back down to where they came from. Mm-hmm. And once we know what the molecules are, where they came from, we can look at ways within those pathways to intervene. That's a potential avenue of where we can look for intervention.
That's really interesting. Like you said, that those biomarkers then would be reflective of what's happening inside the body. Without getting into it for our audience, everybody's heard of metabolism. The word means a lot to many people, sure. But most people have thought of things like lactate or these other byproducts of metabolism. So that's essentially what you're looking for, is those byproducts that we're giving off.
Yeah, that's right. And these are special byproducts because they are volatile. Mm-hmm. They go into the air easily. And so they are not going to be the only biomarkers that are out there. They're just ones that are gaseous. They go into the air. We are starting another study this summer that's going to do blood sampling. So we'll look at the ones that don't necessarily go into the air easily, but they are circulating in the blood. Obviously, the advantage of the breath is that it's an easily accessible way to monitor a fatigue status. Blood sampling is not as easy, but it also helps us understand where they're coming from, again, with the ultimate goal of intervening and finding ways based on what's happening in fatigue to prevent, or at least delay fatigue, prolong high performance, for example. So that's where we're going with that.
It's really, really interesting that, you know, breath is quite, it's available, right? You could put any type, you know, I think of a soldier and they have the comms and the microphone right there. You could just put some sort of tiny little sensor right there and have it. But then a blood draw, you're right. You got to go in and get the stick and.
Right.
Well, half the people like it, half the people, well, I don't know if it's that much, but.
Yeah, I think really what we want to do is always, I mean, understanding how the body works is really, really important, but ultimately we want to use that information, and you have to access that information, and breath is just a really great way to monitor. And we can develop really inexpensive biosensors that we can integrate into a pilot's gear or a soldier's gear. And monitor that continuously rather than, you know, how many times are you going to get blood sticks?
Yeah.
Very rarely.
I was thinking of something you mentioned, and we didn't really talk about it ahead of time, but you're doing mental fatigue, physical fatigue. But I know that in your lab, you look at cognition quite a bit. I can only imagine that you're measuring the effect it's having on, you know, their cognitive decision-making potentially. Is that something else that goes along hand-in-hand with fatigue?
Yeah. So some of the other studies kind of flip the script on fatigue and try to look at maximal cognitive performance.
Okay.
If you think of, I mean, I brought up pilots. Pilots obviously need a high rate of processing speed to do their job, but athletes too, they need to process information at a very high rate. And so some of those other studies are trying to find maximal performance and ways we can, things that influence not performing maximally, things that can help you perform maximally. And nutrition obviously is the background on that, trying to find the optimal nutritional patterns or nutrients necessary for maximal performance. But it's a corollary of fatigue, because fatigue is a drop in performance. Talking about definitions, that's kind of our working definition, is a loss of performance. And one of the big things that we're looking for is thresholds, things that, points at which performance has been lost sufficiently that it's impactful. And so these are things that we're working on to try to make a difference for why we're doing this study.
It sounds like you have, it's kind of this corollary of one leads to the next. And I think of this article, I know that most of our listeners probably won't listen to it, but my PhD advisor had us read, it was like the very first one we read, it was this article from the 60s by Platt called Strong Inference. And it talks about how science, like one thing leads to the next, to the next. It talks about a logic tree that you start building these branches. It sounds like with fatigue and cognition and nutrition, you have a, you have this really nice base to continue this sort of, I don't know, going down this rabbit hole of, it's really exciting.
Yeah. Oh, it's a rabbit hole for sure. And we stay focused on, I mean, I'm staying focused on how we can make a difference out there. I mean, the basic science, kind of the fundamental novelty of what we're doing, is really interesting and important, but I always try to keep my eye on that application. So what we're doing and how we stay focused, rather than every rabbit hole, always helps us lead to that application stage.
I know that this is a little offhand, but I think of like research, when you're trying to follow those things, in researchers, a lot of times things go wrong and don't work out. I'm putting you on the spot, so if it doesn't come to you, that's okay. Is there a time that you can think of something that didn't work out that ended up leading you in a different maybe direction that ended up being like pretty cool? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Actually, this work that we're doing now is the result of a redirection.
Okay.
So we were doing a lot of work in skeletal muscle as the focus. And actually, that's interesting, because we were doing the biomarker tracking there as well. But the work was going very slow. Mm-hmm. It actually has worked out. It just took a really long time. And I took the opportunity to start branching in another direction. And it was the cognitive performance, nutrition, and because it was really important for athletes. I mean, everybody wants to perform cognitively the best they can.
Yeah.
And that it grew into what we're doing now with the breath biomarkers. And we're integrating cognitive and physical and mental fatigue. So it was a redirect, and it emerged because things were not working out.
Well, it's working out for you now.
I think so.
It's really exciting.
And that other path that wasn't working out is working out now. And so that wasn't me. I wasn't the one that worked that out. And it was just collaboration but they're working out really well.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Riekman.
Sure, it was a pleasure.
We always ask our guests if they have a tidbit of advice or something they want to leave our guests with. Is there any little nugget that you'd like to leave with them? I know.
Just a small quote that came across my eyes a few weeks ago that I've been thinking a lot about and actually shared with people, and it seems to be resonating. And I can't remember who I'm quoting here, okay. So that'll be a limitation.
What we will do is we will find it, and then we will reference it in our show notes, so no pressure to come up with it right off the top.
So the quote was, the flaw with our education system is that ideas are coming before observation. Mm. And I shared that with my class, and I said, you have to bring the observation here, and then we can expand and develop the ideas from that. And so I've been thinking about that a lot, is that we have to base our fundamental learning in observation and then grow from that mm-hmm. to the ideas. And I think so I'm still contemplating that and how that influences my thinking. So I thought I'd share that with you because it is simple, but it seems meaningful.
I appreciate you saying that. It seems extremely meaningful. Something that I see a lot of times our current students is methodology comes before idea as well.
Yeah.
They see a cool piece of technology and they're like, I want to use that. And then they're trying to backtrack to come up with an idea. So I really appreciate you saying that because, yeah, you need the observation. You need that's a critical piece to develop the idea. And then you develop the methodology to
right. Let the observation drive you, and the methodology, the ideas mm-hmm. will emerge after.
I really appreciate that. Well, thank you again for being here, Dr. Riekman. And thank you to our listeners for staying with us for another episode. As always, if you have comments or ideas for future episodes, please email us at hotlines@tamu.edu. Stay healthy, folks.
Thank you.